Hey, Francisco, it's go time again. Here you are in your hotel. How's Vegas treating you, buddy?
It's good, man. We haven't talked in like forever.
Yeah, I know. It's been so long.
Nothing has changed, man. Everything in Vegas stays the same, man. You just start losing more money every day. It's been good. Enough, you know, just waiting to catch some rays. You know, I'm also like, there's like some comics here that there's like places that I want to check out. It's called like Area 51. Apparently, it's like a cool like new place that you go and it's like all art stuff, and that you go and like it's just like it's a big warehouse of art stuff. And
I know it's got it's got the neon graveyard, doesn't it? Isn't that where the neon graveyard is?
And all that kind of stuff.
And like, and what's his face? Who did Batman and Mars Attacks or whatever? His museum is there. There's all kinds of little Mars Attacks aliens around and stuff. I think if I got it right. But yeah, man. It's really fun. Anyway, but I was gonna say we're on early this week, and we're doing this interview early for a couple of reasons. Not only because we have a British guest on our podcast, but also because England is playing in the European Football Championships. Yeah. And
they just got done, and I was watching the game a little bit.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah. Yeah, so we've had to change up our interview times in order to interview the British. Did they win in the end?
They must be. Yeah, she's got to be happy because England won. And like, and England's always like has a good team, but they always suck in tournaments. So they advance and they beat Germany. So that was a big win. So they must be really, really excited over there. So she's probably like drunk or something.
I don't think she's a big football fan. I'm assuming she's not. I think the reason why we had to change around times is so that she can avoid all the football like travel and stuff, and like because the traffic will be bad and the pubs will be busy. And so she was worried about the timeline. So this is going to be great. This is all the first time that we've done our preamble without being able to tell our audience like you can look forward to this part of the interview or this part of the interview, because we have not done the interview yet. We're going live with Tiffany in about 5 minutes, and so I guess it'll be up to me to just tell you what to expect. I've been really looking forward to interviewing her. And
You know, Francisco, her. She's your friend.
Yeah, she and I came up on the comedy circuit together in Britain, and we lived in North London, so she's very much part of my North London, there's a good group of comedians that we all lived in North London for many years, you know, we'd be able to hang out on Mondays and Tuesdays when the comedy world was dead, and then we all go off on the road for the rest of the week and then come back to, you know, meet on Monday over pints and stuff, so she's very much part of that community.
I was going to say, I'll ask you later, like, was North London different than other London?
It is. I mean, West London is, you got your Chelsea and all that in West London. It's more affluent.
I like Chelsea.
More, there you go.
That's my type of London.
Yeah.
Go back to the North, man.
Yeah, so you aspire to be more rich, you know, but then at King's Cross... King's Cross in central London, going up to Camden Town, and then North London, there's more artists, you know, more musicians and comedians and stuff. So every little area of London has a different kind of style, you know, just like here in Los Angeles, just the way in Los Angeles, you've got your Los Feliz, or you got your West Hollywood, or Compton. You know, it's all there's all these different areas.
Downtown, Venice, Santa Monica. You know,
So we lived together in North London, and you know, she's a cracking comedian on the circuit. She's on all the panel shows around Britain. She appeared in Game Face, Roisin Connolly's Game Face, which is a great hit show on Channel 4 right now. I mean, you name it, you see her around acting. She's even got an early appearance on The British Office. You know, she appeared on that as well. So she's awesome. She's got some live gigs coming up that I know that she would appreciate us to throw out to you guys. She's playing at the Stand Comedy Clubs, the comedy clubs where I started my comedy career, actually, many years ago. Amazing comedy clubs, really well purpose-built. She'll be performing at the Newcastle Stand. She's doing all three of the stands, basically, and July 6th, 7th, and 8th. taking her show, and she's going to be in Whitehaven as well at the Rose Hill Theater. So she's hitting Newcastle, Glasgow, Edinburgh, coming to Whitehaven. Look her up, man, if you want to catch her comedy. But, you know, before that, you get to catch her shooting the shit with us live here on our podcast.
That's right. So why don't we just start it? Let's go.
Let's do it. Here we go. Let's have a little chat with Tiff Stevenson, everybody.
Bye, hello.
One.
Here we go. We've got Tiffany Stevenson, everybody. Hi, Tiff. How are
you? Hi. I'm good. I'm in my book nook. Hello. Hi. Yes. Hi to Los Angeles and Las Vegas. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. We're all in the lows and lows of the world, and you're in London. So, yeah. So, all the air.
Yeah.
Because you're happy because England won today.
I'm in a plush
today.
Box.
Yes.
Now, we were just talking about this before we went online. Turns out I'm wrong. Turns out she's I said I think she's holding back on the stream because she thinks she's going to get through London traffic because it's going to be mayhem.
You got to watch the game.
But it turns out she was out watching the game. So
it's because I sort of wanted to hold off by like half an hour because traditionally the trajectory for England when playing Germany has been, the 90 minutes, the extra time, and then it's penalties, and then life is horrific for another 2 to 4 years, depending on whether it's the World Cup or the Euros. So I'm thrilled. I mean, and I've traveled to see because I said afterwards, I was like, no, you're crying, I'm not crying, or something. And someone was like, oh, calm down. And I was like, I will not calm down. I've been here before. I've seen them lose. I've traveled to go and watch. I went to France to the World Cup in 98. I was at the England Argentina game, which went down in history for David Beckham.
86?
No, 98.
Okay.
98.
Yeah.
And there was a moment where David Beckham petulantly flicked out his foot when he was on the floor at a player. And so that was that game. That was a very famous moment in that game. So England fans will remember. So I felt like this day has been overdue. It's quarterfinals now. Whatever happens from here happens. But I'm very excited that we're there.
Yeah, no.
Is it overachieving? Is this an England team that's overachieving?
No, England always has good teams. I think they always try to tell everybody
they have good teams. Having lived in England for 15 years, I got to tell you right now, Francisco, they do not always have good. They have good teams
paper,
on paper.
They do.
That's
what I mean. On paper, they do, but they never fulfill their potential when they get to the big tournaments. I don't know why.
I like this team now because they're a younger team, so it feels more like a cohesive bunch of players. I think in years gone by, there's been like stars in the squad, and I always think like for a national squad, like you want them to be, a cohesive team without people going, it's about me. This game's about me. And historically, there's always been players like that who've like stood out and shone, and even with their brilliance, people like Maradona, for example, who was a phenomenal player. But sometimes it becomes less about the team and more about the individual. So I think because they're a bit younger, they're excited to be there, and I think Gareth Southgate's doing a really good job of managing them.
Yeah.
And look, there's a lot of Spurs players in the team, and I don't even like Spurs, so I'm sort of. It's been exciting. It's great to see a new generation come through. As much as I love watching, Paul Ince and Gareth Southgate and Lineker in the years gone by and stuff like that. So I feel like England have been traditionally quite unlucky in tournaments. When the chances have been 50-50, it sometimes just doesn't quite go their way. And today they had a lot of chances. And it was frustrating, but the two goals came in the last 20 minutes. So that was quite, I feel like I've lost about 600 calories through stress.
All right. Well, congratulations. Yeah, game of football too, a team can upset their way all the way to the final as well. We all know that too well. So, you never know. They could be lucky in penalties for once.
I mean, there was a mad thing that happened years ago, well, at the World Cup in 98, was the Daily Star, which is one of our red top newspapers, gave away like free ferry tickets to France. And they were like, this is just encouraging hooliganism because like the tickets are gone. And I think I got tickets for both those games. I went to one in Lyon and one in Saint-Étienne. And I think we just got those outside the stadium and like paid like crazy price. But I traveled with Leeds fans. That's how committed I am. Like, I traveled with Leeds fans to go and watch England. And a friend of mine has written a book about our trip, actually. Billy, he's a Brentford FC fan. And he wrote a book about this trip to France because we just sort of mad things happened. I think we got the train out, maybe. I think maybe we drove Saint-Étienne. It was two separate trips. And maybe we got the train from... Or maybe it was the train out to Saint-Étienne. We were on a six-hour train journey through French countryside. This is 1998, pre-internet. So we had like a guidebook of places to eat. And we ordered a curry to arrive at the station that we were coming into in an hour's time. Oh. And this guy ran down the platform with a bag full of curry for us and got it on the train. We were like, we're on this time train. Can you get it there for that? Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Wow. You were doing DoorDash and Uber Eats before it even existed.
Yeah.
That's great.
The early model.
So how does that work with like when you travel with teams? Like does a team pay for people to travel?
Well, not teams. No, just fans. The fans.
The fans of the team. Yeah.
Fans of the team. So it's not people who would normally be like kind of like, you know, but obviously, you know, it's England.
You're supporting England. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I always see like those people that fly to like, you know, when they're playing games, you know, like teams, you know, Leeds against Chelsea or, you know, and like they all travel to the other, you know, the visiting team. I'm like, are people just paying like by their own money to do that? Or is the team going like, all right, you guys are the 1,000 favorite fans and we'll give you money to pay? You know, I don't know.
No.
So people go, I mean, I'm like, that's too much. I'm like, I'm a fan of teams, but I'm like,
That's why I only go to England games. I still am a Man United fan, but I, and when I was at school, when they were bottom of the first division before there was a Premier League and stuff in the UK, I'm an old school sort of fan. I used to go to Old Trafford with my dad and stuff, and I went to lots and lots of games. But when I started sort of getting into my 20s, I sort of dropped out of like club football. Because I just didn't have the time. It took up so much time. So then it was really just about the England games for me. And especially now with the past 18 months and everything that's happened and, you know, with the pandemic, there's a really amazing summer of sports. You know, Wimbledon is on at the moment as well.
The Olympics.
So actually, the Olympics. I'm so excited about all of that sort of stuff. So I'm happy to be a, an observer, a fan.
Nice.
That's great. When you travel abroad, then Tiff, if you're mentioning getting the train and stuff, I'm just curious. Would you prefer getting the train if you got to go intercontinental? Like as a lot of people know, like you've got the tunnel to France or whatever. Would you rather do that than drive? Do you find the passport check easier?
I've done both. I've sort of driven in. I don't know if you've ever done those skiing gigs in like France and Belgium.
Marybelle and
France. Yeah, Courchevel and France and Austria and a bit of both. I do like driving. Sometimes it's nice to see a place by train where you can properly sit back and absorb the journey. And
I
drove on some of the French trip and it was quite terrifying because one of the drives, it was lashing down with rain. And I seem to remember I'm wondering if this is France or Germany, whether it was the autobahn. I think it was in France. We were driving and in France, they toot their horn when they're overtaking you. But we don't do that in the UK. So this is a really useful thing to know if you're ever driving in France, right? If someone toots their horn here, it's because you're doing something wrong. Like, get out the way, you know.
You don't do it for, because, like, I like honking for everything. I'm like, right. Get out, or like, what's up, or like, hey, I'm here, you know, like.
That seems, feels like what they do in like Asia and stuff. Like when I was in Jakarta, in like, it's like they're just like, honking that they're driving.
So it's like, it's like everything, like, and in the US, it's like, England, like, if people honk here, it's kind of like,
it's because you're too slow. Get off the move at the lights, or you're you've messed something up. And so I'm on guard when someone does it. I was like, so the whole drive, I was like lashing with rain on the wrong side of the road and just like constantly. So that's a bit less. But I've driven in America a lot, and at the beginning of 2020, we came from Sketchfest, and we drove down the Pacific Coast Highway to LA, which was incredible. Drive. Oh, yeah. It was so beautiful. I kept crying.
Big soar, right? Aww. Soar through the PCH, like on the...
Yes. Yeah,
there's like, it's such a nice... I rented a car too, like I think like when I did it too. And it's just like, you know, like, I mean, cause you're like by the coast right there, and it's just like nice. And like, it's like a commercial. It's like a long car commercial.
Have you done it, JJ?
I've driven up and down the Pacific Coast Highway a couple times. Yeah, it hasn't been emotional for me yet. I have frequently thought, this is nice, but maybe it's that Nova Scotian thing of the I've seen the coastline before. I've seen a pretty coastline, but
and I've seen some nice ones in the UK, but I've never seen quite like, I guess a couple of things. I'd watch Big Little Lies before I went. And so I wanted to stop at Carmel and Monterey.
Yeah.
And then we stayed and we stopped at this restaurant called Nepanthe in Big Sur. And a friend of mine had mugs from there. A friend of mine who I stay with whenever I'm in New York, my friend Stephen Olaf. And they had these beautiful mugs. And then they showed me the place online. And I was like, oh, my God, it's this like incredible view. And so I was like, I have to visit this place. So here's what happened. So we drove from San Francisco, and I think a little part of me, I don't know, it was almost like nature knows, or I knew, or that some of that weird kind of connectivity we have as humans, that I felt like I should really take in every moment that I was there and really experience it and be in the now. And I was finding nature, like, and this has been happening for a couple of years actually, but I've been finding nature like increasingly like emotional and overwhelming in terms of, and I think in terms of my
mood. Are you feeling broody?
No.
Mother nature.
I think, no, it's not even that. I think it's bigger than that. It's a spiritual thing. It's it's a being present thing. It's to be grateful. It's grateful that these things exist. So the first sort of bit of it was going across Bixby Bridge, which I'd seen in Big Little Lies. Mm-hmm. And obviously I should have been wearing my full length cardigan, drinking wine, like looking out on the ocean. We got to Nepanthe, the restaurant, and I hope I'm saying it correctly, because this will be embarrassing if I'm not. That's how I've always said it in my head. And as I came through the door, I started crying. And the receptionist was like, it's okay. And I was like, oh, I've like wanted to come here for a few years and I'm finally here and I can't believe it. And I can't believe how breathtaking it is. I've got photos of it. It's so incredible. And then we stayed in a place called Morrow Bay. And right. So there's seals and it was the otters. The otters were the things that got me, like, we
did
weren't
you cry
eating.
With
like,
the otters too?
I cried at the otters. Oh,
are you sure you were just filming Big Little Lies while you were there? I think that you were just like, this is just an episode of like Big Little Lies.
Oh, someone's put it up someone's put a link to it up there. Oh, Brian's put a link up. When we got to Morrow, we had clam chowder. We sat out, and it's got a big rock in it. It looks a bit like the place in the Goonies, right?
Yes.
And there was like a shop that just sold shells, and I loved that. And it had that like kind of mid-century feel in some of the shops, and it felt a little bit like, and I think I loved it for this, it felt a little bit like a town that is sort of left behind, a seasonal town, that if you visit in the off-season, you know, it kind of...
It's dead.
Yes. Yeah. But that's where I saw the otters, and I've got videos of them on my phone. If I feel a bit crap, I'll get a video out. Because I had this moment of, like, seeing the otters, like, swimming and then flipping around, and then one got a shell and was beating it on its chest. So it was just, like, the thing, like, to try and open it. So I was like, is the thing that they... It was the most otter thing an otter could do, right?
Yeah, that sounds very otter. Yeah.
Right? And I just started going, I can't believe that I exist in the world. And this thing exists that is so different to me, and it makes no sense. And that's just wonderful.
The otter?
You had a very emotional trip last time you were here. I saw you on that trip. And I don't remember you being so emotional.
I exist in the world. JJ exists in the world. How is this possible?
I don't know.
If we ever go to the zoo together, I'll be like, all right, wait for it. There's going to be a lot of waterworks.
You and I spent, I saw you on this trip, and you and I, we were drinking at my local, actually. I remember you came and hung out with me at our local bar. And also, we drank a couple times in town, and not once were you very emotional. You were mostly, loud and in a good mood. But there's probably a reason why you didn't go, Jay. I cried all the way down the coast.
But I agree with you with, like, nature. Like, I think also the older we get, the more you, like, appreciate nature and all and everything. Like, that's why when I surf, for example, I just love, like, just being on the ocean. Sometimes not even just getting a wave, just kind of, like, just being in the board and just being by yourself on the board and, like, just, like, and without nothing, without, you know, you're looking at your phone, you're looking, you're, like, really, like, disconnected from the social world, and it's like, so I really enjoy that too, you know. I mean,
yeah, I was really hoping you'd say being at one with nature.
No, well, yeah, I've been at the sea with nature and the otters and the seals. They surf.
Here's the thing that you think about, like, if it was your last day on Earth, what would you want to do? And I'm not gonna
play with the otters. I mean,
I want to go surfing and drift on the ocean by myself.
I mean, I'm gonna invite my family or something.
Yes, of course. So you got hug your friends and family or whatever, and, you know, in a career aspect, you're like, no, but in a good, like, the ones that aren't this, you know, like, probably play a stadium, just do one last gig, right? Hug all the people that I love. And the other two things that I think about relentlessly are, like, you know, swim in the ocean, watching the sun go down. And to look at the stars or see the northern lights or see, you know, there's always two or three things in there from nature. It's not, can I go to this restaurant and eat this meal one last time? It's always like, can I see this marvelous thing that I'm part of? And yeah, so I've just had a couple of years of trying to, and especially with the lockdown, of really trying to absorb nature and get involved with it, because everything else has been restricted. So, you know, we're in a situation where we've had very little control for a year and a half. And so actually, you know, trying to hang on to those moments where I can see stuff and appreciate it and be now.
Yeah,
that's a great outlook on things. And yeah, and to your point too, like, sometimes you forget to look around, and it's really good to remind yourself. Sometimes I forget to do that even in a city. Like, even amongst concrete jungle, sometimes you forget to look up at, like, the lovely architecture. Yeah. Not to sound too cheesy, but you'll see elements of architecture that you don't realize you have tunnel vision. And that's what I get when I'm driving. I have tunnel vision. And times when I'm on trains and go, sorry, I'm able to absorb a lot more of the countryside, because you can look around and look up. But it's funny. You just reminded me of that, Tiff. I got a really bad habit of never looking up.
Yeah,
when I'm in a city, and
you wonder why we're depressed as people. But honestly, we do this all the time. Yeah. We're not here, you know.
No,
that's the old the Greeks and the, you know, we look to the stars to dream.
Yeah, what you mentioned too, because I'm instead of, like, meditation and mindfulness, like, be in the moment and experience everything and, like, just live everything how it's supposed to be in the moment. I think just by doing that, you get to look up and like, oh, look, I'm walking here and I'm feeling this and all this stuff. It's like, the thing is, like, society has made it to is like, you gotta be what success is and this. And so it's always like you're planning ahead or you're thinking of what you didn't do. You're not living in the present. And then it's kind of like, once you forget that and you really like, you know, just live in the moment. Like if you're in the ocean, experience the ocean. Don't think about, oh, I gotta have this show tonight. It's like, no, get to that point when you get to that point. You know what I mean?
Do you guys both find as well that past this, when I do, if I do less now, I do like one thing or I do like one show, and I've done Edinburgh's where I do my hour show in a night and I've done six other gigs and I've done a day full of press, or I'll be filming a TV show and then I'll go and do a gig that night, like the mm-hmm. pace at which I live my life pre-pandemic. Now I do like one thing and I'm so fucking tired.
Yeah, yeah,
and I
yeah.
cannot believe the pace I lived my life at before and how much adrenaline I think I must have been.
Yeah.
Yes,
and we have, like, a, we have a lot of new things as well. I've introduced, I now I have a podcast. I used to just go and do a gig somewhere and that was it. But now I got a podcast and a Twitch channel.
But also
and
I
online
like the
all the time. So
of doing less and like just doing like, I'm fine. It's like, hey, I did one show tonight. I'm cool. I'm good. Like, I don't need to be like, oh, yeah. I need to do five shows to feel that I'm like, nah, like, did one good show, concentrate on that good show, and then go do something, live your life, yeah. you know, go, you know, go watch The Otters, you know what I mean?
I think they call it working smart and not working hard.
Isn't yeah, yes. live, and live yes, not work to live, but live.
Work, no, work,
work, to work sorry, it's work to live.
It is, it is work to live.
It's not yeah. live to work, yeah. yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Entirely. And so speaking of which, speaking of these pandemic times and having to change, you know, your routines and stuff, you've still been on the road a little bit, haven't you?
A little bit, yes. I had a bunch of, I was supposed to be coming back to America. So what I did was, because I have amazing timing, so I did Sketchfest January 2020. Mm-hmm. And then
just getting it in there.
Just get in there. Just, no, because that was
time.
A big...
Just in time.
I've never been to San Francisco before, so that yeah. was a big deal for me. Nice. Very exciting. And then, so yeah. we drove down, and then I got a rental, because I signed with a manager in LA and stuff. Got a rental, and then was like,
a
okay.
Rental? What do you mean by a rental?
Like rented an apartment in Beechwood Canyon in Hollywood okay. Dell. Beautiful place to myself. I'm in my 40s. I can't do the sharing shit. So, yeah. so plus it's a second place. I already, you know, I'm in London as well. My family are in London. Yeah. So I got this lovely place. I furnished it. Love my landlord, really cool Mexican guy, who was very, very particular about like who he wanted in the apartment. So he was like, I like you. He met my partner. He's like, I like him. Let's do this. Got it. All amazing, all exciting. Furnished it. Left at the end of February, I think it was, to come back and do a few shows in the UK and a TV thing. And that was like March, yeah. early March. Yeah. And like, I literally tried to move to Hollywood at the...
Yeah, they're in the beginning of the end. Of
yeah.
the
world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. So I can't remember what question you were asking me about that, but what was leading me into that? Anyway, I had.
It was Road Miles. Road Miles is what
well,
led
Road
us
Miles.
To this.
So I was supposed to be touring the show and doing it again. And I've done it a couple of times in LA and a bit in New York, this current show that I'm touring, which was from Edinburgh, which is now 2019. So it's like 2 years ago nearly that I was doing this show. And I had to postpone the dates a bunch of times. I've managed to get out to a few of them. I did an open air show in Brighton last week. And I've got some shows coming up at Soho Theatre in August and some shows at The Stand. So I have a few more, but they are now what was once 30 dates in a concentrated period with a tour manager is now like I've managed to retain about 15 of them split out across
mm-hmm.
like yeah. 3 or 4 months. And you know, you can't really do a proper PR push or anything else with that. So
no.
we just, I've got, and that's where the control thing is that's where I've just got to let it go. A
let
bit
it go, yeah.
Hope people come.
Yeah, we're not yeah, out of just, it yet. We're not in a like, smooth place yet. Lots of stuff is still getting canceled all yeah. Like internationally
and, I think it's also
and
good
stuff.
To just, with the show right now, it's kind of like we're just still getting back to it as comics, you know yeah. what I mean? So it's kind of like, like, okay, just try to even like, yeah, like new material, even material that you wanted to do. Because also like that big gap of all the, you know, the like, there was stuff that I was like, I even it was new, I was like, I cannot do this like pre-pandemic stuff. It just sounds weird to me to be like, so I like, I've written a lot of stuff and so it's trying all that new stuff. And so yeah, so it is, I think it's good to have those, like, because I'm the same way. I had like all these shows line up and now it's like, you know, they're all scattered here anywhere. And I'm like, just take it how it comes, get better, you know, and that's it.
Yeah.
I had an hour show booked in, I think, which was my first one back after the second lockdown, my first like sort of live show. And I'm very unorganized, so I didn't really look at the venue and the stage and everything else. And when I got there, I met the guy who was running it, and he was so lovely. And he was like, everyone's so excited. And then I saw the room and realized it was in the round. So it was a stage in the middle, and it was in the round. And there were little sections. It was, they had like mirrored sections that they'd put between the tables.
Okay.
So there were like eight sections round with like tables in them. So it's like being in a disco ball. And I walked in and I looked at that and went, oh my God, it's my first gig back and it's in the round. And then I went, do you know what? It's just going to be really nice to do stand up in front of proper audience members again.
Yes.
And I went out with that attitude and I had such a great time. Like such a joyous time. And I was like, I have to remember that, because I think sometimes, you know, when you do it for as long as we've all done it, you can get very complacent and you can get angry and you can get really picky about the room not being right and this not being right and where you're going on and how many tickets you've sold, you know, and blah, blah, blah.
Completely,
and this was a moment of going, oh no, I'm really good at this and I love it. Oh, I love it.
Yeah,
but going back to what you were saying before, it's like, it's, you know, experiencing, living in the moment. Like, let me do the best show tonight. Doesn't matter how many tickets I sold them. Just do it, you know, just embracing that,
It's also important to remember that these comedy audiences are all getting a reboot now. So even the comedy fans who have had, you know, they're starving for comedy. I find that the audiences, when they are happening, when they are full rooms, right, they're nicer, happier people right now. The cynicism hasn't yet set in. Yeah. Like, maybe we'll have a good year and a half or something of some fun shows before the audiences go back to being, it's not as good as what I expected or whatever. That you know, that general, like, which happens a lot in LA as well. They're very spoiled for entertainment here in LA, and yet the shows that I've been out to in LA are, everybody's happy. I haven't seen any kind of movie spoiledness yet.
American audiences, though, on the whole, and I've done stand up about this, so I will sort of hold my hands up on this.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I did, maybe for one of my Montreal, I think it would, if you've watched any of my stand up at that, I talk about it in that, which is how British audiences compared to North American. So like British audiences, American audiences tend to go in with an attitude of like, this is going to be awesome, you know, and get hyped and they're ready for awesome. And British audiences going, this is going to be shit. Right? It's what we want. It's what we need. It's what we deserve. Because we hate ourselves, right? Like, so we go, and then anything that goes above the expectation, people go, oh, it wasn't shit.
That wasn't.
It wasn't shit.
I love that. I love that.
How does that work in terms of like performing? Like, you know, I never perform in England. So like, how was that? Do you have to go, like, do you perform the same or do you also lower those expectations to then to be like, look, whatever, you know, I don't know. Or do you go like, hey, come on, let's have some fun. You get like, nah, you know, weird.
No, I think if you're the come on, let's have some fun person at a gig in the UK, people are like, I'll tell you if I think it's funny. You'll know because I'm laughing, you dickhead. Like, whereas I, and in America, it's quite nice to not have to go on against something at the very beginning. Having said that, though, it just means you need to be, I think you need to be not better. You just need to be really good. I think, and people will laugh if it's good. Then you just get less benefit of the doubt. You know, in LA, I see people like, people get their like, you know, credits list and stuff before they go up on the stage. And for LA, I mean, it happens. Yeah, bit of,
yeah,
like,
we don't do that in Britain.
Yeah, yeah, like, so we, like,
it will literally make them hate you more. It, yes, will literally, if you list your credits, they will, oh, she thinks she's great then, doesn't she? Well, here, let's see about this.
So are you just gonna go like, give it up for JJ, that's it, like, not even,
yeah, that's, yeah, you, okay, can say, you, yeah, can say, I, my friend, I love them, they're very funny, you can do that. You know, like, you know, and if you're a good host, and there's a lot, there's lots of people who are good hosts, and, you know, like, and again, the MCs in the UK are a bit different to America. Like, you know, you do get really experienced people and, like, you know, famous people hosting and got host, it, you know, because they're, you know, so it's a bit of a different thing. But if you've got like a good MC, then they'll riff off what the other person's been saying and be playful and bring you on in a nice fashion. And like, they'll also do material before bringing you on, not just crowd work. That's like the worst for me.
Yes,
if you just do crowowd work, then I come on and try and do jokes. The crowd are like, what is this? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, we had the guy before you. He was talking to Janet specifically about what's in her purse. It seemed really unique and original.
Well, that's,
and you're just there going, he does that every friggin' night, talking to somebody about their purse.
That's a mark of a bad host when they don't, like, it's fine if you do crowd work in the beginning, but if you set up the show to bring on the next comment by doing bits so the crowd is ready to go. Like, I learned that a while back at the comedy store.
Yeah. Yeah, they need to know the rhythm is going to change,
of course,
and it changes. And also that you're going to engage as the host, but the comic who's coming up might not.
They might be
like a one-liner person who doesn't want to respond to it. Or there could be someone who's like really interactive, but they might not be. So that's your job to make that like so good. And that's one of the things, if you're really good as a host, you can kind of get trapped in that host role in the UK because you're so good. You know, and it means, you know, I like, you know, doing spots so then I can run around and do different spots. Also, just the time and the luxury of, you know, playing around and losing them just so you can win them back and doing all of that kind of, you know, sort of stuff that you can do. So
I think one of the bonuses of hosting though too is that you can load up a specific new piece of material if you want. When you have that small window, that 90-second window between acts, you can load up that new piece of material and get it out.
But also that works for somebody that's like, that works for somebody that's like, sometimes that's like a one-liner or like kind of like quick jokes things. Like for me, for example, like I'm like a host, but if I need to have like a rhythm, people know my story because my jokes make, you know, have to do with my life and stuff like that. And like my, so it's like, you know, it doesn't mean you can, but it's just, you know, a little harder to do.
You can. I mean, the way it would work in the UK, though, Francisco, because you get breaks as well. There's a break in the middle of the show. That's the other thing I was going to say. When Tiffany was saying, when people are filing into the show, not only are they going, this is going to be shit, but they're also going, what kind of drinks can we get? And will the bar be open? Or do we have to pre-order? Those are the priorities. But so you do have an opportunity if you're going to be hosting, because you do have to do 10 minutes at the top to warm everybody up. So you can try your stories and stuff in there. And then you have to do another 5 to 10 minutes at the start of the second half. So you do get longer opportunities too. So you can exercise all those things. But I think to Tiffany's point, it is kind of fun just doing spots because you can run off to the next club as well.
Yes.
So they both kind of have their.
So
their
I think Hollywood. Oh, Hollywood, LA audiences, New York, I think, tend to want a bit more of like a pace of like gags.
Boom, fast, quick. And
LA will go for a bit more alty and will go for a bit more time and a bit more storytelling, I feel like. But I also feel like the audiences are nicer and they're easier. And maybe it's just because I'm British as well. So people are intrigued. So I sound different when I'm out there. I'm bringing something slightly different. You know, and that's not to say that English audiences are. They're just, they will work you. I mean, that's why people do the Edinburgh Fringe. Like, Scottish audiences are some of the hardest fucking audiences in the world. The Scottish people are funny, you know? Like, when you meet people who are naturally, like, they're like, come on then, what the fuck? You know, like, and so that's, you know, that's why the Edinburgh Fringe is like, you know, it gets people really sort of match fit and stuff. So I kind of like having come through in the UK, having got my chops and going up against hard audiences. I'm grateful for that now, but I do kind of like the ease of stepping on stage in LA, but somewhere like LA. But that, I guess the difference is LA has like some of the most amazing comedians in the world and some of the worst dog shit I've ever seen. You know, like there's a real like, and there's a lot in between. Yeah, no. And there's a lot of people who say they're comics, and I'm like, have you ever been paid for this? I don't know. You can say you're a comic till you've really been paid, and you know, so yeah.
That's usually the watermark. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I imagine.
Yeah, we have Tiffany. We have homeless people here in LA that call themselves comedians. So you're very.
Yeah, I mean, I don't open mics. Yeah, when I started doing open mics, I was like half people that were like, you know, okay, sane, and then the other ones were like, there's literally homeless people, or like they just wanted to be heard. So it's kind of like, yeah. And then people, when they do shows here in LA, because they sometimes, especially when they would do a lot of produced shows at the Comedy Store or the Laugh Factory, the Improv, they're like, oh yeah, I performed there. I'm a regular. I'm like, nah, you're not. I was a produced some show. You're like, do I mean, like, is your name on the wall? Are you a pay regular? Like, they don't know. So it's like, it's annoying when people, like, you know, discount the whole, like, I'm a comic. I'm like, nah.
Well, it will stop you from getting better. That's what I see. You kind of lose, if you just start in a place where it's kind of easier. What I saw was a lot of people who were confident but didn't really have, you know, many jokes or material, and inherently found
that's
themselves.
LA in a nutshell.
Yeah, or super good looking people who you were like, do you know that this for comedy? No, like this, you're not. You find yourself fascinating, but like I need to hear some ideas. I need to hear some jokes, or like, but you just kind of talking, and you know how a good looking person is like. Well, everyone normally looks at me when I talk.
Like,
yeah.
You know,
we have a lot of that in LA. We have a lot of that.
But I think that's
I have never seen women perform in bikinis until I came to LA, and then women will perform.
Whoa,
here, like,
I know
so
who you're scared. Talking about. Let me go get my charger.
I thought there was more than one. Isn't there a whole bunch? It's a bit of a trend.
I saw someone tweeting it's girl comic bikini season the other day.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's a very, very popular move. Here, but
I just can't imagine. Can you imagine in like Runcorn on a Wednesday night?
I know, I've never seen it
in the UK.
I've never seen it. I'm just like, oh my god!
But weirdly, they'll do it at darts. Someone will come out in a bikini at the darts.
Hey man, every place has its moments. Tiff, I got two things that I want to ask you about. First of all, I want to you look fantastic. By the way, I know that airbags. And deployed on that lovely face of yours recently, and I was going to ask you, were you driving somewhere? Was there? Yeah, are you healing up okay?
Yeah, can you see it?
Yeah, I mean, you look great. Yeah, it looks great. I mean, compared to the photos of when it happened, which I have seen, I was very worried about it. But you're looking fantastic. What exactly took place? If you don't mind, if it's not too soon to.
Having an airbag deploy in your face is a great way to get your lips enhanced for free. When I say free, I mean a lot of time and pain, but sure. It was just coming out of lockdown, and I had a TV gig booked in, so it was just like just coming out like in April, and I'd gone to Brent Cross, which is a bit like what you would call a mall near where I live, and to buy some clothes for the show. And we were like recording five episodes in one day. So I was like trying to get everything. And so I was like kind of happy. We just come out of lockdown, work's coming back. It's all exciting. We're on our way home, and we were on like the North Circular, which is like three lanes. And I wasn't driving, my other half was driving. And the car in front of us stopped dead. Because a van in front of that just stopped dead in the road. And I think it was some kind of weird tailgating thing where the van tried to fuck the car up by stopping dead. We're like, stop tailgating. Yeah. So they missed it, but we sort of plowed into the back of them. But Paul was driving, so I was in the passengers, and he sort of steered, and the impact was on his side, really. And it wrote off our car, but the airbag deployed, and... there was all this powder in the car. I've never been in a car when an airbag's gone off before.
Yeah.
So I was like, ugh, dazed, and like breathing in this powder. So I was like, out. like a monster, yeah. just like kind of smashed the door open, which luckily we were in the middle lane. So luckily there was no like traffic coming down yeah. the other side.
Yeah,
like yeah. some other half was like, stop, stop. You know, so I got out on the side of the road, was kind of like Man. Disorientated.
You must have been in shock, I was going to say. Yeah,
in complete shock. So I could like, I was like, oh, fuck, what's happened? Oh, what, like, I can feel blood pumping. I can taste blood. Oh, fuck, my teeth. Is it like, so that was my first thing. I was like, is it knocked my teeth out? And then I was kind of like feeling around my teeth. I mean, paramedic came out and it was all very dramatic. And I had like a bunch of bruising across my chest, which I think was from the airbag as well.
Right.
Because I found out the airbags are like, designed for male bodies, like,
and oh, really?
Yes, oh, yes.
Fucking, so if you fucking patriarchy, here we go.
If you got boobs, if you got Wait, boobs, so how, they're just
what? Oh, because they're because
so. I got a bruising yeah. all across here, like, I like my airbag. His airbag came out and he was fine, he didn't have a scratch. His came out the steering wheel, mine came out the passenger side, and it was like a full airbag, but it just kind of like. Yeah, just like burnt me. So I think there was bits of like shrapnel from the airbag exploding, which is what cut my lip open. So I had to have like a bunch of stitches in that. I thought I would be fine to film the TV show the next day. I mean, I wasn't. Nah. It was like, I looked like I'd done. I was like, you should see the other guy. It's a car. I was like, oh, this, what's gone on with this airbag? And people were like, yeah, they're designed. Design for men, they're like, apart from Volvo, who do design for women. I was like, well, I was
so,
in a Volvo.
Oh, so how does it, the woman, like, what's the difference of the airbags for men? I mean, for,
well, men, yeah. it's height and dimensions and boobs. So we've got all this right. kind of like soft tissue stuff. So yeah, they're designed. All the fashion is male. Boobs are
like, so it's so like a Francisco. Like it's just softer or like you know.
Yeah, this is all. Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I mean they're bad.
I don't know. I don't know how they. No, these are the airbags. These are the airbags.
Wait, what are they? They're soft.
What are boobies? Boobies are like what?
I've never explained boobs to another comedian before. This has been.
I talk about the airbags. I was like, I don't know what boobies are like. Oh. They're like airbags. Okay.
So
I didn't know that.
And we weren't even going that fast. I think maybe about 20, maybe like or just under. And it must have been over 20. I don't know at what speed they deploy, but I'd never been in a car where they deployed. Yeah. It was more stressful going to the emergency, and obviously being in the height of COVID, and then like distancing and plastic, but not really distancing, and going, I got to sit here for like 3 hours to wait. But this is why I love the NHS. This is why, God, you guys, healthcare for like Americans, you know, the plastic surgeon came down and stitched my lip and fixed me up. And I went in the ambulance and it cost me nothing, not a single penny. You know, that's the way society should work.
That's how it should be. But like,
yeah, you know, but there seems to be just one country of all of the westernized countries that seems
that
to think
they care more about
way.
Money than people. But that's the capitalism of the U.S. But well, yeah. That's a different podcast.
Yeah, I would like to bring up one other thing that you made me think of there, Tiffany, when you were talking about getting your place in Beechwood Canyon. So because this is an American thing too, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if it's different in the rest of the world, but you said you had to furnish your apartment. Didn't that weird you out? Because in other cultures, particularly in the British culture, we don't have to furnish things when we rent. When you rent, it comes with
it's
furniture. You
can,
yeah, you can even ask your landlord. You can even say to your landlord, "Hey, I wouldn't mind having a nicer couch than that. Can you get that?" And that's part of, and that's everywhere that I've lived and rented. America is the first time ever that I've seen you rent something. You have to furnish it. What did you find
and
of
you
that
pay
experience,
for your
Tiff?
Insurance too, man.
I found that to be wild because then it's just a whole other cost, and I had to rely on, you know, our friends Chris and Hannah to then go and put it all in storage, and John Hastings to put all of my stuff in storage. So I was quite handy when I was like, the one thing I want new that I won't not get new is a bed and a mattress. I was like, I need that new. that has to be brand new.
Of course.
So then everything else, I went to like the council thrift store on a President's Day sale, and I ended up getting a leather sofa that like looked like it had never been used, and I got it for like $90. And I got these two Crate and Barrel chairs, which Chris and Hannah now own, which I looked up afterwards and I was like, these are $1,000 each. And they were in the council thrift store, and I paid, they would have been £60 each, President's Day sale. The one good thing that came out of Donald Trump was, the President's Day sale. So it was like two for $60. And then I looked them up. I was like, these. So I did stuff like that. And I went to the sales at Bed Bath & Beyond. And I kind of like did it quite smartly. And I have friends who were like, you can have this. And, you know, so I managed to do it. Like, I maybe managed to furnish the whole thing for like maybe about $1,500.
All right. That sounds great. Like you actually enjoyed that experience. I would have.
I love thrifting.
A shock. Right. Okay.
Yeah. It is shocking. It is shocking to kind of go. Well, surely just like stuff like, you know, like not even soft furnishings. I get maybe if people don't want to share soft furnishings, but stuff like, you know, cabinets.
Yeah.
And certain stuff
shelves
like that where you're like,
stuff like that.
Shelves and like, curtains, yeah. Curtains like, you know, and or blinds, bureau. You know, yeah. Yeah. Yes. I bought a bureau. I bought a desk. That was the other thing I got in there.
Right.
You know, but yeah. I sort of enjoyed it because I love, it was one of my favorite things to do whenever I'm in America is to hit the thrift shops or the Crossroads and all of that. I love it. I'm obsessed.
Right.
I like going into a place and going, who the fuck bought this? Like, why would a person own this piece of tat? And then obviously the gems. I've got behind me actually here. This I got in like a garage sale in New York, and it's like a little... It's really cool. I got it because it was so creepy. Wait.
It looks like a children's radio.
Oh.
It is.
It's
the candy.
But it's like a... Oh, wow.
Can you hear it?
But it's a little radio.
It's just like a twist it and it plays that one song.
Yeah, right. So like a radio thing?
Yeah.
The Candyman. Yeah.
Wow.
It's that really...
Kind of like the beginning of a horror movie right there. Produced by...
Well, yeah.
Jordan Peele.
It's really creepy. Look how creepy it is.
When you become a serial killer, you know to carry that around with you. Oh my God, look at the drawing.
Yeah, yes. No, that's creepy, yeah.
This is truly psychotic, Tim.
Yeah, and so I collect tat like that from all around the world. I have like a tat shelf, which has on it like magnets from places that I've visited.
A skull too in the back.
Yeah, right? Yeah, there's a sugar skull there. And I've got one of those Dan Aykroyd... Is it Dan Aykroyd vodkas?
Yeah, the skull.
Skull vodka. But I've also got salt and pepper shakers that are the Chrysler building and
good choices.
In New York, snow globes. I've got Russian dolls.
Wait, so you are the person who says, like, wait, who buy this?
Buys this? The one thing I didn't buy, which I found a photo on my phone, and I should actually, I could probably text it to you, JJ. So you can see this because it's crazy mad. Let me see if I can get it to you. I found it on my, I found it when I went to land.
I can still hear it playing.
The Candyman going.
Yeah, that's very, that's like literally when before or after the murder happened.
Oh, here we go. Right. I'm going to send you this pic. Right now, JJ, just so you can see, I didn't get this piece of tat, but I kind of wish I had. I wish I'd have got this because it's, well, when you, I think you have to sort of see it. But yes, I'm the person that buys absolute crap from places. here we go. JJ, I've just sent you, tell me if you can see this or if you can get this up on the... And if you can describe what you see when you see it.
Oh my God. What? I can't. Is that to pull a pint? What is that?
It's a bottle opener. In the shape of, can you tell us what the shape? Yeah. It's
In the shape of an eggplant?
No. But it also, it's not just the fact that it's got Lanzarote emblazoned down the sides. You're like, when I go to the Canary Islands, I like to bring back a cock and bull shaped bottle opener with a salamander on top.
Is that what's going on there?
Yes, that's a salamander on the top.
Oh my God, I can see it now.
Yeah.
All right. It does. Because
they're indigenous. Penises and salamanders are indigenous. Phallic. Penises and salamanders are very much indigenous to the Canary Islands.
Right. Yeah. It does look quite phallic. I think Francisco's having a Las Vegas situation, possibly.
Oh yes, yeah. Maybe he just like literally tapped out when you showed that picture.
Yeah, he wasn't into seeing the penis shaped bottle opener. It looks like throbbing purple eggplant. Like
as soon as the Candyman music stopped playing, that's when I disappeared.
Yeah. Did you see the bottle opener though, Francisco?
The picture, it was a bottle opener. It looked like a pipe to smoke weed.
Oh no! You could smoke it if you like smoking cock and balls. it's a cock and balls with a salamander on top in the show, like tat like that. I didn't buy that because I couldn't face putting that on the shelf.
But you had the photo. Yeah, you're like, I'll collect this in another way.
Yeah. I've got like a call to prayer, like alarm clock that I got in Bahrain, but it's so plastic. It can't be near an open flame, anywhere near, like stuff like that. I've got like kind of crazy. I got one with Mussolini. I think it's an ashtray that just says Mussolini is lonely. And I brought that in China, of all places.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot of dictator merch in China.
would you say that this is one of your favorite things to do when you're on the road then? Do you hit the op shops?
Yeah, that's
and the
like one of your
shops,
hobbies.
And that's how you will kill the afternoon before a show and stuff. That's a very, you know, because that's, we always ask that of our guests, because some people like to go to the sports arenas or, you know, or what have you, or some people are foodies. They want to take in the food. But that's very interesting. You like to go to the op shops and see what kind of secondhand treasures are there.
Yes.
And also when you travel, do you have any like superstitions or stuff like that to travel with? Or like when you go, or do you have any sentimental values that you bring with you, you know, that don't, you know, when you travel as well?
Things that I bring, I don't think I have any superstitions apart from remembering my retainers, because I don't want those teeth going crooked. That's happened a few times. I've forgotten my retainers. But I do have one thing that and I mean, this would probably be a piece of advice, less a superstition, but more like a piece of advice to anyone that likes going to water parks. In years, I've gone to like Cyprus and Greece and the Canaries and stuff. When I go on a beach holiday, I always like to spend a day at the water park. So my advice to everyone is to get yourself some codeine, if possible, or cocodamol, and back that shit right up. Because when I was 18 years old, I like went on a water slide and gave myself an accidental enema.
And
you've ever come off a water slide with like such force? I was in a bikini and like I thought these guys were staring at me because I was hot stuff. Like, I mean, something was hot. It wasn't. Well, there was hot stuff anyway. But I came out of the pool like this the water came back in the other direction. And it just like kind of went flying up my asshole. And then I got out of the pool and then I was just like, oh my God, there's like literally shit running down my leg. That was absolutely horrific. And I don't know how you prevent that apart from like making it solid, backing it up so you haven't got any kind of liquidness running.
Is that a function of codeine? I wasn't aware that
codeine backs me up. I don't know for anyone else, but like if I have codeine for a couple of days, we're having a constipated time.
I would have thought, considering one of the ingredients that would make you more fluid.
I think anything that's ingested in a different way is a different situation. But a codeine tablet, which has paracetamol in it, as well, or cocodamol has paracetamol, it will back you up. Otherwise, if not that, then I don't know how else you prevent this situation from happening. You know, it's about physics, isn't it? The speed you're coming down versus the like how the quickly the water comes in the other way. I don't know if there's a way of stopping it.
Wear a swimming
nappy like kids do. You know, like
or just go or fast for a couple of days. It's like, you know what? I'm not eating for 2 days because I'm going to go to the water park. So I'm all, it's all juicing. I'm juicing for two.
What?
Like, yeah, I'm getting ready for the water park.
I can't believe it doesn't happen more often.
I mean, I remember just going to water parks when I was a kid, but I never had that happen to me, you know.
I must have really angled my anus on the way out. I mean, just don't know.
I mean, it's
maybe
also
I came
like,
down anus first, like legs in
well,
the
yeah,
air.
You never go anus it's... first on anything. That's
Tiff, it's the patriarchy again. Water slides are designed for the male anus.
Yeah. Is that well actually
your nuts do your nuts prevent it from maybe you got a like a safety guard like
that's
your
it.
Nuts your nuts our, prevent you
our nuts are a certain type of windbreaker in a water slide
they're
situation they come they carve through the air and create the vacuum behind us that allows us to avoid the water slide enema very true there's finally a use for the balls that nobody knew about.
I mean, I really think I hope that someone gets in touch to say that's happened to me too.
But that happened
it
to
feels
you, like,
very lonely.
Once? It just happened to you once, right?
Once when I was 18, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
but I think maybe that's an. I mean, it's not like it happens to you all the time.
No, but I do think maybe I've had a. I've still gone on water slides, but I won't necessarily go on very steep.
The steep
I'd go
ones.
On like
yeah,
I'd go on like one of the
like
rings,
with the thin, what is it called? The tire thin, whatever.
Yeah, the tire. I'll go on that. I'll go on the lazy river. I'll do like the easy ones that don't look very.
Actually, I did shed my pants on the lazy river.
Yes. You're too lazy to get out and go to the
toilet. Yeah, I was like, dude, I need codeine. Like, I mean, you could have just stopped, man.
Oh, it was easy to find you on the lazy river. Dude.
That's why they got well, lazy.
What a turn for our podcast. We've never gone down the shitting on water slides angle with any guests before.
So, no, so. I don't know. I think the first
like
time we actually talk about shitting. But that's like, you know.
Have people not talked about shitting abroad? Because one of the wonderful things about going to the Middle East is the tons of fun bum gun that they have in all of the, you know, the hotel.
The
and
what?
I think that's, well, I call it the tons of fun bum gun. You can call it whatever you like.
No, I don't understand.
But, I know what you meant too. I've never heard it called that, but I will from now on.
It's a great system they have there that I feel like everywhere else should have. And, you know, places here have B-days and stuff, same as, in America, but in the Middle East, they have next to the toilet a hose, like a shower head, and it's got a little trigger. So it's like, that's why they call it the bum gun. And once you've been, you can just put the hose in and it will just
clean yourself up. Yeah.
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 I like that. Yeah. Yeah. That's like, so it's like a more of a pressurized bidet.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, but you haven't got to have like a bowl full of shitty water like you would have. I don't know.
And sometimes it's not a full toilet as well. Not, I don't mean full toilet, but I mean it's not. Sometimes the toilet is in the ground.
Yes.
You have to squat over it, Francisco. So you're squatting.
Well, of course, I mean, I think what you're saying is that you took a shit outside and you host yourself.
No, I'm actually not.
I've done that.
No,
I mean,
no.
In Turkey, they have quite a lot of toilets like that where just a toilet out and about it will be the hole and there will be a hose.
Yeah.
Actually, that's
why I don't understand why this whole thing, when the whole pandemic started, people were going nuts for the toilet paper. I'm like, wash yourself. It's cleaner to take a shower after you take a shit than toilet paper. you know.
Yes.
Toilet paper is the biggest scam in the history of in the world. You know, like people are like, hey, forget washing yourself. How about if you should just take a toilet paper?
just rub cotton.
And it's going to be cleaner. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. Just buy yourself some shit tickets and have a good time. I do. I agree. I think like washing is just, it's cleaner and it's more environmentally sound.
Baby wipes. More I like baby wipes. It's a good like in between, you know.
But yeah, I'm thinking when I get a bathroom, I'm going to get one of those fitted. I'm going to have
I'm actually going to have somebody that like a little butler that just like washes. Like has a little hose and just goes like shh, like a car, and then just hopefully I get to that point where I can have somebody that
hires. Just summon him. You can just summon him.
No, he's gonna be there the whole time.
Bump gun boy, come in.
Boom. And then the music of Candyman plays as he watches me.
Hey, listen, if Stevie Nicks can hire someone to blow coke up her asshole, allegedly, there were rumors.
Oh, really? that happened?
Yeah. It's a rumor that, you know, that used to happen. Right. I love her. I'm obsessed. Anyway, if that can happen, surely you can pay someone to get a bum gun.
Why do people do that? Just... Like, I don't understand. I mean, I never done coke, so I don't understand, like, why
there's nerve endings there.
Yeah.
There's nerve endings.
There is.
No, there's lots of nerve endings.
So it gets absorbed really quickly.
So it goes into the bloodstream. So that's why like people would do it in the nose or like gums, which is why isn't it why Bowie had to have all his teeth redone? Because I mean, I'm just accusations are flying around here. Allegedly, I don't know if they're true.
I do see a book over there behind you that says how to do coke.
how to spread rumors without being accused of slander. That's the book.
No, allegedly.
I just finished Stevie Nicks' biography, actually.
And, is it in there?
Fantastic, and it was those things get mentioned as you dive into the Stevie Nicks world.
Right.
But also what she went through, her career here on the West Coast of America. It was very interesting. So good choice, Tiff.
She's phenomenal. Yeah. She's my favorite. Yeah. And I used to do a bit of stand up. I don't know if you remember JJ saying that's why all her vocals, like, because she like basically like snorted a lot of cocaine, and that meant all the Fleetwood Mac songs from the early 80s onwards started beautifully, and then she always turned into Cartman from South Park.
Oh, right.
Like, there's always a little bit of the song, like where the note it gets really nasal in Cartman.
Yes,
she's amazing. She's amazing. You know, I would have loved to have caught Fleetwood Mac when it was all. I know Lindsay Buckingham's not touring with them now, so I never get a chance to see to see the Mac in its, you know, in its peak formation.
In its peak formation. Yep.
Wow, been amazing, Tiff. Man, you've been absolutely amazing. Do you think there's any time you'll be coming back to LA? Like, are you thinking about coming back to America now that we're?
I'm hoping to. I'm trying to come in August. And I have a friend's wedding in September in LA. So, like, I'm trying to come out after my Soho Theatre run. So, like, the second half of August. So, it really depends on whether or not I'll have to go via another country.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If the isolating is still kind of in play, which at this point, like, you know, it hasn't been, you know, we still can't travel. So depending. But I'm hoping second half of August. I think my visa, I've got to get a new visa. That's the other thing. I think about 2 years of my 3-year visa has been eaten up by pandemic and delays. Yeah. So hopefully August. If not August, then maybe October. But I think at the end of October, hopefully I'll have got my new one by then. But yes, so hopefully by the end of the year. Let's say by the end of the year, I'm hoping to be back out, do some shows, do the big showcase version of my show, which was I was supposed to do, you know, 15 months ago or whenever it was. So, yeah.
I was just laughing because you started with, like, I'm probably going to be there by July. Well, not maybe August. No, well, maybe. You know what? Maybe the end of the year. You know what?
Yeah, I just realized I don't want to, what's the word? Jinx it.
Plan ahead. Live in the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
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 That's good. But yeah, thank you. I would love to catch up when you get here. You know, maybe hit some of those, the thrift stores. I need somebody that knows how to do that. Cause I don't, me and my girlfriend, yeah. I mean, she loves that stuff too, but like, it's good to like, cause you gotta go with somebody that knows. I don't know. I get too impatient, and I'm like, yeah. You know.
My friend Holly said, you're like Terminator when you get in there. You're like,
oh, great.
So I know. Yeah. And I'm good at shopping for other people. So I'll find clothes and shoes and cool stuff that I like myself. And then I'll find crazy little ornaments, mad books, like, you know, then just weird stuff where you're like, and then I like to like sort of go back and create the backstory of who owned this. In fact, that same trip that I got this, I'll tell you this, I know this is our last question. I bought a box of photographs of like black and white photographs that were just like different people over the years.
Oh,
and
no, they belong to somebody else.
They belong to someone else. I don't know who the families are in them. So part of me is kind of like, it might be fun to kind of go, are you this family in this photo? But also I've written the backstories for them myself.
Nice. I like the sounds of this.
So like, okay, that's just like a little
characters, you know, for
creating these like backstories. So a lot of them are like, like someone in their back garden and someone looking upset with their brother on a swing or whatever. So obviously there's been house clearances or something. So it's just like, and it was a box called Old Photographs. So so that's just think it's a fun writing exercise and stuff to do. So I got to start putting some of them up on Instagram and sharing them.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. I mean, that is, you've given us lots of advice. That is, our final question usually is along those lines. I don't know if you have anything else hidden in your traveler's soul, but we do like to ask you if there's one last little piece of travel advice that you like to hand on to people. I mean, if somebody asked you for travel advice, you probably wouldn't say hit the op shops. But
yeah, but I feel like that's a good one. Yeah, that or like, always carry wet wipes.
Like always carry, says, I like always, it. Always
well, that I wipes. Like. That's a great advice because, in the bath, you know, like the planes or the airport bathrooms, they suck, you know, so it's kind of like.
Even pre-pandemic, I'd always have like a small pack. You know, you can get like these like 10 wipes.
Yeah, the little ones. Yeah.
Yeah. So that can save the day for a lot of stains on your clothes when you're traveling and you're like, I can't wash this. Wipes are good for that. They're good for hands. They're good for face. They're good for lots of things.
For anything.
Very handy. Very handy final piece of travel advice from Tiffany Stevenson, everybody. Congratulations one more time, Tiff, on England's victory today.
Yeah, well, you know what? I watched The Secret before the game, and I think I really helped the lads out.
Oh, well.
There you go.
Well, watch it against the Ukraine or Sweden, because I think, let's see who's winning right now. Let's see who you guys are going to get. Let's see. Oh, they're tied. Well, Sweden and Ukraine. I think Ukraine is gonna be. Oh, Baldy 3 says thanks for the stream. Tiff is awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Tiff is awesome.
There you go.
Thank you very much. I can't see who's on the stream. I can just see you guys. So I hope everyone's enjoyed it. I think he's Scottish. I think he's Scottish. That's a true. Yeah.
That was a very, very English crowd. It's like, don't get too hype on yourself.
Yeah. Don't get too big for your boots, England team.
Yes.
This is going to be shit. Oh, it wasn't shit. Yeah. Well done. Yeah.
They didn't make it. I think it's going to be maybe England, Italy, if they don't, final. I'm calling it right now.
Well, that will be tough in my house because I live with a Scottish Italian, so that's going to be a grudge. Yeah. That's going to be a grudge
That'd
match.
Be a good one. That'd be a good one. Yeah, but I think that those are the two big.
I mean, he
left.
Might still get victory because, like, I knew that Scotland wouldn't win against England, although a 0-0 draw for Scotland was still a victory. Like, he was singing Championes for days because everyone in Scotland was like, "That's a win for us." But Italy, you know, that's a very, very strong team. So, listen, the teams that are left.
I would say Belgium, but like they don't have De Bruyne is injured, and then Hazard is injured. So I don't if they just then both injured, I don't think they can do it.
Yeah.
Well, best of luck. Yeah. Best of luck. Thanks for showing up in such a great mood after an English victory. But you're always a killer. We knew you'd be an awesome guest, Tiff. Can't thank you enough. And hopefully we'll see you soon in live and in person.
Thanks, guys. It's so nice to see you.
Thank you for joining us. Nice
Cheers, Tiff. Bye. Everybody, go see her live, everybody. See you later, Tiff. Bye.